What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Tomatolito Boxing Show. And let's dive into today's episode as we're going to preview Edgar Berlanga's fight tomorrow against Patrick McCrory, a fairly unknown fighter who campaigns at 168 as well. He's being marketed as a heavy-handed fighter. He is undefeated, McCrory is. And it's an interesting fight, at least on paper. I've done a little bit of research on McCrory and watched several of his fights, several of his performances, and I've come away with some key points here that are definitely telling as to how this fight should play out tomorrow. Now, the way that this fight is being sold to you is, or to us, is that Edgar Berlanga is one knockout away should he perform at a high level and come away with an explosive knockout tomorrow, then he should be basically in line to throw his name in the hat for the Canelo sweepstakes, whether it be for the Cinco de Mayo weekend or for later this year and potentially in September. Eddie Hearn is selling it to you that way. Matchroom is selling it to you. DAZN is selling it to you that way with the preview episodes and all the shows they're doing as they're looking into this fight. It's kind of like the ESPN effect where they tell you who the best fighter is, but they all happen to be top-ranked fighters, right? They tell you this is the best fighter in the world and this is the best fighter. And regardless of the weight division, yet they all happen to be top ranked fighters, right? And they rarely mention fighters from other promotional companies. So there's never any discussion. This is what was the case with Berlanga when he was over at Top Rank and ESPN, and now he's over with Eddie Hearn and Matchroom. Edgar Berlanga is walking into this fight undefeated. Remember how they were hyping up Berlanga just a few years ago with the knockout streak because he was stopping all his opponents in the first round. That ended up, that came to an end in December of 2020. That was the last time that he was able to stop anybody in the first round. But he did have an impressive streak. Up to that point, until he ran into Damon Nicholson in the spring of 21, a veteran fighter, Damon Nicholson. Up to that fight, Edgar Berlanga was 16-0 with all 16 wins coming by way of knockout, all which took place in the first round. So he was basically en route to set a record himself. And that came to an end when he faced Damon Nicholson, who was a veteran crafty fighter at that time. He lost in an 8-round fight. He lost a decision there to Edgar Berlanga. And a fight in which Berlanga looked fairly well, but it was actually one of the first fights where he was tested. And we finally saw him get out of the first round. And so we got to see a lot more of Edgar Berlanga in that fight. It was very telling as to where his boxing was at, his defense, his stance, his stamina. And so it was a good test. It was a good showing by Edgar Berlanga. He got a unanimous decision win from there. And then from there, his competition began to step up. In the very next fight, Berlanga fights Colceres, the Argentinian fighter Colceres, who's another crafty, rugged journeyman who has a lot of experience and has been with some decent names in his day. He's actually, Colceres, just side note, he's going to be fighting Osles Iglesias, who's the IBO champ at 168. That fight's going to happen March 7th. Colceres has fights with Billy Joe Saunders. He lost that fight. He fought Eric Bazinian, who's an undefeated fighter, and he's looking like there's some promise behind him as well, behind his career. I think he's at 32-0 at the moment. And he's fought, I mean, decent fighters in his day. Basilio Silva, he's fought Christian Zarate. Who else? There was Sebastian Lujan. That was one of the more notable wins that he has in his resume, in which people started taking notice of Colceres. So if you remember that fight, the reason I'm talking about Colceres is because he was the first fighter to drop Berlanga in the professional ranks. And he did so by countering Berlanga with a right hand. In the middle of an exchange, Berlanga leaves his body completely open. And delivers power himself with his right hand and got countered with Coceres' right hand dropping him. And Berlanga hits the canvas and everybody panics because the up-and-coming superstar who everybody's banking in on just got dropped. And he got up wobbly and Coceres hunted him down. A fight in which Berlanga was up and was making up to that point fairly easy. His power was bailing him out. There was a lot of clinching, a lot of interruptions throughout that fight up to that point. But Berlanga's power was the story of the night up to that point. And Coceres was fairly damaged in his face. His eye was nearly shut, his right eye. Yet Coceres managed to drop him and went in for the close, but was unsuccessful. Berlanga ends up coming away with the decision victory there, and that was his first time that he was scheduled for a 10-round fight. He got the decision win from there, back-to-back fights where he's tested by more veteran fighters than what he had earlier in his career up to that point. Obviously, he was 16-0, like I said. All 16 fights up to the fight with Nicholson were all wins by way of knockout in the first round. Nicholson stopped that streak, took him all the way to 8 rounds. In his very next fight, Berlanga steps up to a 10-round fight, which is the Coceres fight we're talking about. And so they start stepping him up in competition in a fairly quick manner. But the matchmaking was great. Nicholson was perfect at the time that he got him, and Coceres was a perfect opponent for him to be able to test himself at a higher level and start moving up and capitalizing on the hype that Berlanga was building up at that point. Undefeated, right? Remained undefeated. Then he goes on and fought Steve Rolls, a former Golovkin opponent. And another fight that was a tough fight. It went all the way. It went the distance, all 10 rounds. And a lot more work by Berlanga. He gets the decision win there. That was a fight where he ended up challenging for the NABO title, the WBO's NABO title, which is basically like the WBO's interim version, just knocking on the door for the WBO champ, who happens to be Canelo, right? He's still the undisputed champ at 168. So, I'm sorry, I'm getting those fights confused. He fought Coceres, who for that NABO title. At that time, the title was vacant. Not that Coceres was a champ, but both of them fought for that vacant title. And everything nearly crumbled. The plans nearly crumbled for Berlanga as he got dropped in that one. Walks away with the decision. Gets crowned the new NABO champ. Goes on to defend it against Steve Rolls. And in his very next fight, goes the distance. All 10 rounds. Good test. Good work. Getting rounds under his belt. And gets the decision win there. That's the first official defense of his NABO title. Goes on to fight another veteran, another journeyman, another crafty, rugged fighter in Alexis Angulo. If you remember, Alexis Angulo had prior, leading to this fight, he had 2 losses leading to that fight. He had lost to Zurdo Ramirez when he challenged him for the title. And then he lost to David Benavidez. If you remember that fight against David Benavidez, Angulo was the only one in the running to gain to be able to win the WBC title for this very same division. The WBC super middleweight title was on the line for Angulo only because David Benavidez missed weight. He came in well over 3 pounds over the weight limit. I think he came in just under 171 pounds where Angulo made weight. So David Benavidez at that time eliminated himself from becoming champion. If you recall, he's had his hands around. He's a three-time, they consider him a three-time WBC champ, but one of them he lost to substance abuse. And then the other one due to weight, where he was unable to challenge for it, and that was this one. And now he has the interim championship for the WBC again. And that's why they consider him a three-time champion. Well, he's got 3 interim titles. He loses one. Well, he lost the original one. And then he lost his chance at this one. David Benavidez ends up stopping Angulo in the 11th round of that fight. Angulo was just a round away from potentially becoming champion. He actually gave David Benavidez a really good fight. It was a really tough fight, but Benavidez's power was the story, like always, like it has been throughout his career. It's been the story that has bailed him out, and he ended up pulling the stoppage on Angulo in the 11th round. So Angulo came up short with that. When he fights Berlanga, this is a veteran Angulo that's stepping into the ring, who was a huge step up from Nicholson to Coseris to now Angulo, was a huge step up for Berlanga. Kudos to him and the matchmakers and the promotional company for allowing Berlanga to go there. But remember, they were shooting him up to try to get him into a major, major main event, a major name on the opposite end of the ring for Berlanga. And that's why they were fast-tracking him with this type of opposition. And it nearly backfired. This is just two fights ago. And this is the fight where I started checking out from appreciating what Berlanga was doing. This is not a hater episode. I'm not going to hate and just destroy Berlanga like most channels do or like many channels do. And I'm not a cheerleader either for Berlanga tomorrow night. I just don't think he's there. For the way that they're selling this fight against McCrory tomorrow night, telling you that he is, if he knocks out and stops or puts on a sensational performance against McCrory, which obviously that means either several knockdowns leading by a stoppage or just knocking him out like he used to at the early portion of his career, which is likely, and we'll talk about McCrory right now and his style. But they're selling this fight to you, telling you that if he pulls this off tomorrow, he is that good and at the level to be able to throw his name into the running against Canelo. And I do not agree with that. And I'm pretty sure you're on the same page with me. I don't think he has any business being in the ring with Canelo. Not yet. And this thought process comes because of this fight with Angulo that I was just mentioning. This is just two fights ago. And if you didn't see that fight, at least go watch the highlights. But this is a tough fighter who I just gave you a brief recap of his resume, having been with some great opposition or fairly good opposition. Lost to the biggest names that he's faced in his career, Zurdo Ramirez and Benavidez. But both of them were fights in which he challenged for a title, for a major title. Not an interim, not an NABO, not a smaller version title. He challenged for the major titles. That was the Angulo that stepped into the ring with that level of experience against Berlanga. And this is the fight where Berlanga basically gets a gift, because at the end of it, people walked away with an idea that Angulo should have won, that he did enough to have won that fight. But this was the Puerto Rican festive weekend, where they do the Puerto Rican parade in New York. The ESPN sold this fight to you as a childhood story and the feel-good story of Berlanga, where he was a child himself. With his dad in the stands in that very same arena that he was now headlining, where as a child he witnessed his childhood hero Miguel Cotto take on Zab Judah. Now, it had all come full circle for him, and he was main eventing that same arena where he happened to be in the nosebleed stands just years earlier. They invited Miguel Cotto, who was front row witnessing this fight. They tugged on those emotional cords for you to tune into this fight, and they sold it to you. And Fat Joe was there, and many celebrities, and New York was out there, New Yorkers, Puerto Ricans, you name it, they were out there in full force for Edgar Berlanga. And the fight ends up being a tougher fight than expected, tougher than what he had experienced up to date. Angulo is rugged. He muddies the waters. He will clinch and grab and frustrate you, fight you on the inside, fight you from a distance. Interrupt your flow. craftiness is what Angulo brings to the table. Sometimes on the verge of maybe a little dirty boxing that he sneaks in there. And he did elbow Berlanga several times. But this is where we saw Berlanga fully tested and crumble to the pressure of what was such a big event that he was representing and that he was performing in, under. The big lights, the big stage that he was performing under, he crumbled. In my opinion, he failed the test. He gets the decision victory in a heavily favored, in a heavily one-sided Berlanga crowd. When the announcement comes on and they give him the decision, people are booing him. He nearly threw away his career in this very fight that we're talking about against Angulo. And he showed where he's at mentally. He is professionally immature. This is not maybe slightly emotional, but he's professionally, mentally immature. This is not the argument of Ryan Garcia. Oh, well, he's young. Well, let's see how he grows into himself. He's coming into his own, where Ryan Garcia, like we've discussed in past episodes, Ryan Garcia, in my opinion, is young, is emotionally immature, is still acting like a kid, talking like an adult, but his actions are that of a young adult, of almost of a teen. Irrational at times, says random stuff, gets into these emotional back and forths. Mentally, he's immature. But he's coming into his own. He's talking a big game, and his vocabulary is getting better. So when you continue to work and chip away and craft and work at your craft, it's only a matter of time until you actually do mature. And that's the Ryan Garcia growth that we're seeing here in the past few years and currently, where he says one thing behind the mic and then goes on social media and gets into these tantrum back and forths and emotional back and forths. That's the level of immaturity of Ryan Garcia. Edgar Berlanga is in a completely different level, where he's older. He talks the big game. He has fairly good fighting, fairly good boxing pedigree, good fighting knowledge. He's been around the block. He's an older man and boxer and somewhat should be more mature than, say, a Ryan Garcia. But this Angulo fight exposed him. And what I'm referring to is not the fact that, let's put aside the fact that people disputed that he won this fight, because we've all witnessed bad scoring on behalf of judges, questionable scoring, and we could be biased many times, and we could be biased for Edgar Berlanga and say like, no, he won. He won this fight. Come on. We all know what we saw. He won this fight, hands down. Where people for Angulo would be saying, no, he got robbed. Immediately people that are the Angulo side, they're going to say robbery or corruption or fixed or whatever, right? That's we've experienced this. And then people always go off, well, this is boxing. But this wasn't the case. We've seen bad scoring and he got the decision win that night. Really bad scoring, by the way. Those scorecards were 99-91 on two judges that scored a 99-91. Dontrella Canezo and Bernard Bruni scored a 98-92. This is what I'm getting at. We've seen bad scoring. We've all been witness to it. This was his big coming out party, Puerto Rican parade festival weekend or festive weekend, and Miguel Cotto in-house, and ESPN is selling it. And it's almost like we knew that there was no chance that Berlanga was going to lose a decision. It was already predetermined is what we were getting into, unless Angulo derailed the plans. And he gave him a really tough, really good fight where the scorecards didn't display that. But something happened in the seventh round where I completely checked out of the Berlanga train. And that was when he tried to bite him. He tries to bite his shoulder, followed by trying to bite his ear. And you hear Tim Bradley losing his mind on the commentary and the commentator saying this and that. And then post-fight, people that are getting interviewed, they just discard it. Like it was no big deal. And then the interview happens with Bernardo Osuna post-fight. And Berlanga says, hell, he elbowed me. So I was going to give him a Mike Tyson moment. Something that would have disqualified him. This happened in front of the referee and nothing happened to him. Not even a warning. Let alone a point deduction. More severely would have been a DQ, and he would have derailed his entire career. There was no way that this was going to happen on this weekend where it was a coming out party for Edgar Berlanga. And this is how he performed under the biggest lights at that point in his career, the biggest stage in lights for him. And that's how he performed. And then the fight went on and he got the decision. And that's how he acted and how he presented himself on the post-fight interview. Not even denying it. Something that would have shown maturity would have been like, listen, I want to apologize to my opponent. I lost my head in there. Cooler heads will always prevail. Like I don't know what happened. It shouldn't have gone that way. It'll never happen again. Instead, he's like, yeah, I was gonna give him a little Mike Tyson moment. Well, he would have been DQ'd, and the referee saw it, witnessed it. He's right there if you watch the highlights, if you watch the recap, if you watch the fight, which is more extensive detail. Not just that, when the fight ends and the referee breaks them apart because they're exchanging, Berlanga is mouthing off to Angulo and then headbutts him. Nothing heavy, but still headbutts him, rubs heads with him. Forcibly, right in front of the referee once again, and nothing happens. So I'm beyond the fix, or it was fixed for him, it was this. That's a whole different argument. It's what he showed us, that when he finds himself in muddy waters and deep waters, he starts checking out. In a horrible fashion. That was almost like a tantrum that he threw by trying to bite his opponent because he just couldn't figure him out and his power wasn't bailing him out. Consistently running into opponents that are dealing with his power. And that's what he showed. This is just two fights ago. In his very last fight, he fought Jason Quigley, and this was his debut with Eddie Hearn in Matchroom. No longer ESPN and Top Rank. This is his debut with Eddie Hearn and Matchroom and DAZN. And overall, great bounce back fight for Edgar Berlanga. Great performance. In the end, he has 4 knockdowns on Jason Quigley by the time it was all said and done. But again, his power did not bail him out. It dropped Jason Quigley 4 times. But he wasn't able to get him out of there. He wasn't able to close the show. And again, he went the entire distance. This time, a 12-round fight. The first 12-round fight of his career. And he was heavily tested in the fight as well. Jason Quigley, a quick fighter with good boxing. With good counters and good speed. Good accuracy on his part. Was boxing Berlanga fairly well. Even amidst being injured after the third round. The fifth round was a little bit of a questionable knockdown where Berlanga was swinging, lands his punch on Quigley's hip. Quigley loses his balance and drops to a knee. They count it as a second knockdown. Nonetheless, listen, give credit to Berlanga. He got 12 rounds under his belt. He's got really good work in the last 3-4 fights. Really good work under his belt. He's putting a good body of work there, but where is his head at? Because now the pressure's on him once again, especially with Eddie Hearn coming out and selling it, and DAZN and Matchroom and the commentator selling it that he is one knockout away tomorrow night from throwing his name in the Canelo sweepstakes. And he has no business being in there, not yet. He hasn't proven himself yet. He is 21-0, 16 knockouts to his name. But we see that every time he is tested at a higher level, he steps in the ring with better opposition. He exposes himself a little bit more every time. We've all seen the videos of sparring where David Benavidez comes out and says that he knocked him out several years back in their sparring session. We saw the video of Erickson Lubin. If you haven't, go check him out. I'm not telling you this because we're exposing Edgar Berlanga negative. What I'm getting at is a different point. Erickson Lubin, who's a junior middleweight, sparring with Edgar Berlanga, who's a super middleweight, two division difference. Erickson Lubin doubles up on a right hand and drops him. Hurts him and drops him. Then we see Coseres, who dropped him in the professional ranks, the first fighter to do so. All these acknowledgments that I'm making, or these comments that I'm making, are for the same reason. And for this reason alone. He continues to leave his left hand down and exposes his chin. He swings with a right, throws his power punch, and continues to drop his hands. Every single one of these times that he's been caught, they have been with right hands. And Angulo caught him multiple times. Quigley caught him multiple times when he would double up on his 1-2. And he would break the guard and catch him with his right hand on the chin. Berlanga's chin has been tested time and again. And it's usually the right that catches him, because he continues to leave his left hand open. Left hand down. He keeps it lower profile, almost rib level, rather than having a high guard, knowing that that's an issue where they continue to catch him. I get it. In sparring, that's where that's supposed to happen. That's what's sharpening the iron and making him a better fighter. I get it. But it's the same issue that continues to present itself. This is what we used to talk about Jaime Munguia. And Eric Morales fixed a lot of those issues, because he used to get caught a lot. So Edgar Berlanga continues to have that issue, and look for that tomorrow night. Because now we talk about Patrick McCrory, who stands wide. He's wide-footed stance. Likes to fight with his gloves down by his waist. Reminds me a little bit of Josh Taylor when he's countering. But Patrick McCrory initiates his attack, and his entire game plan is based from his left hand. Everything initiates from the left jab, and he has a stiff left jab that tends to stop his opponents in their tracks and humbles them, keeps them from coming in and attacking, stops them from the left foot attack or the lead foot attack, and he also possesses a solid left hook when he decides to double it up from that jab, or if he just throws it on his own. That left hand is nice. It's a good left hand power punch that he possesses. But everything begins and ends for Patrick McCrory with his left hand. Wide stance, gloves down, pops that left hand up, and look for that tomorrow. Patrick McCrory is stepping into this fight at 18-0 with 9 knockouts to his name. He is nicknamed the Hammer, and that's because of his right-hand punch. when he hits and he throws, he is an older fighter who started in the game late. He has some bad habits. He doesn't have the most developed boxing skill yet. And possibly won't because he's an older fighter. The positive for Patrick McCrory, as far as his age, is that he's very mature. He's mentally and emotionally mature. He knows what he's in there, what he's in there to do. He doesn't have tantrums. He doesn't have breakdowns, mental or emotional. He does get hit a lot, and that's because of his hands being down by his waistline. His left jab is good, and he's gonna hit Berlanga quite often with that left jab. Now, with his hands and his guard being so open, Berlanga should have success in landing, especially because he possesses power. McCrory's right hand is the issue. He guards it like a missile, similar to what we used to witness in years past with Ike Corte. He guards that right hand over and over and over and just keeps it in while he's attacking and using his left, and then unleashes that like a missile. He doesn't have the quickest release, but he does have a strong punch. And if he lands that clean on Berlanga, which we're just talking about this, every time that Berlanga has been hurt and dropped professionally by Koceres, but in the last few fights, all these tough tests that he's had in the last few opponents, like Angulo, like Nicholson, like Koceres, like Quigley, they've all caught him with that 1-2 and the right hand because his left hand tends to be exposed. So McCrory could very well land the home run punch and derail everything for Matchroom and for Berlanga. Because this is why they call him the hammer. The success that McCrory has is the right hand. The cards are in the favor of Berlanga that he's got better footwork, better boxing, faster hands. McCrory, slow with footwork, wide stance, hands down. He's going to be there to be hit. His left jab should be what sets the pace for McCrory. But Berlanga, with the better footwork, should be able to infiltrate that space and land his combinations on McCrory. And potentially eliminate him, get him out, knock him out. And that would be the success for Berlanga. He should be able to win this fight, and he should be able to take McCrory out. It should not go the distance. He should be able to take him out early in the fight, at least within the first half of the fight. Because Berlanga is a better versed and more of a well-rounded fighter than McCrory is. But McCrory does have power. And the intrigue is that Berlanga gets caught on the left side of his chin by right hands. Over and over and over. And guess what? McCrory has a strong right hand, which has gotten him those 9 knockouts. That's the intrigue. Should he throw his name in the hat for the Canelo sweepstakes? No. Not there yet. But it'd be a hell of a fight if he was to fight Munguia. Now, as of now, the Canelo, as of this episode, it looks like Canelo is in negotiations with Jaime Munguia for Cinco de Mayo weekend. It looks like David Benavides is going to be campaigning at light heavyweight, one division north at 175. And the WBC has come out and sanctioned Alexander Govzdik, who is a former WBC champ at light heavyweight, and relinquished that title at the hands of Artur Beterbiev when he was defeated by him. This would be a WBC eliminator, as Mauricio Suleiman announced, between Benavides and Govzdik. In line for whoever wins the big unification between Beterbiev and Bivol. Great opportunity for Benavides. One, he doesn't have to cut down all the way to 168 anymore. He could fight a little heavier at 175. Two, it's an eliminator for the WBC, which he currently holds. The interim to Canelo at 168. And opening another door for him at 175 against the winner of Bivol and Beterbiev would be amazing for him, for his career. It's a great move. Stop waiting for Canelo and keep going. There's stories out there of Benavides and Bivol where Benavidez has gotten the better side of Bivol in their sparring matches. And we saw Bivol stop Zurdo, where also Zurdo and Benavidez have a past as well in sparring sessions. And Benavidez seems to get the better side of Zurdo in those sparring sessions. So that would be really interesting if Bivol ends up beating Better BF, unifies the division, and gets into a matchup with David Benavidez should he beat Alexander Govzdik. And now him and Bivol are facing off in a professional setting. That would be great. That's the way it goes. David Morrell, the other champ, holding line, or at least knocking on Canelo's door at 168. He doesn't have an opponent yet. Hopefully he gets in with a good name. They're talking about Caleb Plant potentially. And then Osles Iglesias, who's the IBO champ, he's going to be fighting Marlos Coceres, who we mentioned earlier, a former opponent of Berlanga. So this is the intrigue tomorrow. Edgar Berlanga, I mean, let's see how he looks. Let's hope everything goes well for him. Patrick McCrory, this fight's going to take place in Orlando, Florida. Patrick McCrory has a puncher's chance. I don't see him outboxing Berlanga. This should be a good showing for Berlanga. Matchmaking is favoring Berlanga on this one. They found a good opponent where Berlanga could and should look well against and should be able to stop. And I think that's why Eddie Hearn is doing this, because they foresee that Edgar Berlanga should be able to stop McCrory based on his style versus McCrory's style. But McCrory possesses a really strong punch, a really strong right hand that could eliminate Berlanga and derail all these plans. That's the intrigue tomorrow. But watch out for that left hand that Berlanga likes to leave down, because McCrory, being a right-handed puncher, aka the hammer with that right hand, could very well catch Berlanga. That's the intrigue there for tomorrow night. So I'll leave you guys with that. You guys let me know what you're thinking of this fight. The other fight to keep an eye out for is going to be Andy Cruz, who is in the third professional fight of his career. Andy Cruz, the former gold medalist, Olympic gold medalist for Cuba. Eddie Hearn has him under his promotional banner. He's going to be fighting Brian Samaripa, who is a veteran, or at least a journeyman type Mexican fighter, good fighter. He knocked out Giovanni Godinez this past December, and that was he stopped him in the eighth round. So he's coming off of a solid win with a solid opponent, Giovanni Godinez, a journeyman himself. Lost to Angel Fierro, a split decision last year. That's possibly one of the toughest opponents that he's had on his young resume. And other than that, the majority of his opposition is up and coming. So this is going to be a good showing where Andy Cruz should continue to look stellar in his professional career, as they're building him up for a title and they're trying to fast track him to a title. Kind of like what we saw with David Morrell, or what we saw with Lomachenko. Well, Andy Cruz is a superb amateur, former star, so far has impressed in his two previous professional outings, this being his third, and he should look really good tomorrow against Samaripa, who should be able to give him a good amount of rounds under his belt. But I see Andy Cruz coming away with the stoppage there over Samaripa. Of course, the intrigue is, hopefully we get an Andy Cruz, Keyshawn Davis showdown in a professional setting, because those are former foes where Andy Cruz has gotten the better of Keyshawn Davis in three or four times that they faced each other in the amateurs. And they usually faced each other in championship type matches. And in the last time was in 2020 in the Olympics, where he ends up beating Keyshawn Davis for the gold medal. Keyshawn walked away with the silver medal, lost by decision on that one. So that's the co-main event. Fights going on in Orlando, Florida tomorrow night. Let me know what you think about Edgar Berlanga, how you see this fight playing out, and if you think I'm too far off or if I'm missing something. But that's where my issues are with Edgar Berlanga after the Angulo fight. I just don't see that he's mentally there. Once he steps up into even better opposition, is he going to check out, or is he going to answer the call? Was this a fluke? but a lot of immaturity displayed on that fight, and nothing really changed between that one and Jason Quigley, aside from promotional banner and network that showed his fight. But nothing really changed from Berlanga. We still saw the same Berlanga talking the same way. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. You tell me how you're seeing it. Leave me a comment. Shoot me a message. What have you. Shoot me an email at that, and I'll reply to you. And tomorrow you could definitely find me on X, as I'll be watching the fight and I'll be commenting on it live. So feel free to reply or drop me a message on there. Have a good night. Thank you guys again for tuning in and for continuing to download and spread the word about the show. We continue to grow, and I'll continue to bring episodes your way as long as you continue listening. You're on that end. I'm on this end, and wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you guys so much for the continued love and support. Have yourselves a great night, and let's hope this fight delivers. Take care.